Welcome back, WNST, Toss of Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. I'm usually wearing the sweatshirt or the hat. I'm leaving it up to Don here this week in the aftermath of elections and holidays. We're into a new calendar year, but we got some of the same problems. We got some great, great guests. All of it brought to you by our friends at State Fair and El Guapo over in Catonsville. Our friends at Franco's, where I got to get over there, get a pizza and some meatballs at a bookmaker sometime very, very soon. And our friends at Faithley's are still shipping those delicious, when they arrive, you know they love you if they ship you Faithley's crab cakes. So you don't have to just do it on Christmas or New Year's. You can do it anytime. And Valentine's Day is coming up, so Super Bowl Sunday, and the Ravens might be involved in that. Don, this is one of my favorite county executives. Not that I pick favorites, but he likes me, so I like him back. and I know we've been through this before. We got together, C.E. Pittman, we got together with all of you within 6 or 8 weeks of COVID last year. So we have all of these conversations that were fresh to General Assemblies and moving in and all these different things occur when – and then COVID hits, and then everything sort of moves to that. But this week, it's been a lot about transition and elections and power and stuff that's going on at a federal level that I don't know if it takes attention off of everything that's going on here, but it's something that has to be discussed.
You bet it does. Yeah. It's crazy.
I asked Mr. County Executive again. We're with Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman. Welcome him back. He's a Baltimore Positive alum. We're asking, we've really been talking to folks throughout the day, and I'm trying to think back to when I was county executive, and you're so busy, and you're going from thing to thing, and you're trying to make government work, and you guys are trying to do it in the midst of COVID, which is unprecedented. Walk us through Wednesday's events. We're taping and recording this a day after there was an attempted overthrow of the United States government by thugs at the U.S. Capitol. Walk us through how you became aware of what was going on, because unlike the president, you don't just sit and watch TV all day.
Right. And because of COVID, I work from home most of the time. I go into the office when I need to, or if I have some sort of an event or something. But so I was at home I think it was actually, I'd gone downstairs and my wife mentioned something. And then I had a Zoom meeting, which I have, you know, almost every hour on the hour with a couple of my, my top, you know, advisors, staff talking about, we were there to talk about other topics. I can't even remember what it was. And we sat there looking at each other, just kind of stone cold silence. Didn't know what to say. Didn't seem to be right to be talking about anything but what was going on in the Capitol. We all were started turning on our laptops or our screens. And, it was just sort of dumbfounded. And then for me, kind of sadness, you know, kind of hit. And not that it was completely unexpected, but when it really happens, it's almost like somebody in your family is under attack. When you kind of believe in the institutions of the United States of America, and you know, you brought up on that, and it's just sad. I mean, you think about our forefathers watching that and just being sad, like, where'd we go wrong? A little bit of anger, but I was just sad and. But I'm an optimistic guy, and I think, well, okay, yeah, we knew there was that element out there. We knew that our president was a selfish, angry, slightly insane. I know that doesn't sound very respectful to say.
Well, you're not slightly insane.
It's about the man.
You're either all the way off and saying we're going to go down, and I'm going to go with you behind bulletproof glass to the carnage that came on the backside. And I've been out on social media. You've been on the campaign trail. You've seen fringe elements. You've seen people that will believe anything he says. You've dealt with them. We've all had to deal with them and sometimes in our families. Right. But the fact that he now has a significant portion of people in your county, in my building, in my everywhere, believing somehow, And has had other elected officials, many other elected officials, sign on for this ruse, when you know throwing or grabbing an election in this country is just something that we don't do. It's something that, quite frankly, there's so many blocks between that that you know about out of Annapolis and every state that it's an absurd allegation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as angry as some of us have been over the years about things government has done, you know, we do get to election time and yeah, there's talk about, well, maybe the Russians are hacking the machine, this, that, or the other, but we know fundamentally our elections are where the rubber hits the road and where everybody has to go out there and convince the public that they're right rather than, and the public decides. And when you pretend that it's completely been stolen when it clearly hasn't, man, that's a real dagger to the heart of this country. And it's sad.
You know, it's interesting, Mr. Exec, that you use the term sad, because when you did, I sat here and I thought, you know, I think that's it. I think that is the word, because like you and Nestor and all of us yesterday, our phones were blowing up. Text messages were flying back and forth.
No work's and getting done. Productivity's over.
You know, I said to Nestor and others, you know, in the middle of the day, I said, I'm a mess. And what I meant by that was, I think it's captured by your word. I think the combination of watching the people's house be overrun by a group of thugs and terrorists, watching the lack of preparation for the event, and then the thought that millions of Americans would either overtly or tacitly be approving of that, and then knowing that within 24 hours, and I hate it when we're right, predicting. I said to someone early afternoon, just start the clock. It will not be very long before Matt Gaetz and the rest of the clowns begin to suggest that somehow these were Antifa members who put on Trump shirts to embarrass the president. And the sad thing is that with social media platforms, millions of, and I watch, I follow them, I see them, millions of Americans are now, including backed up by some of the outlets and some of the hosts on Fox News, that you have to understand this was likely Antifa trying to make Trump look bad. How do you govern? I mean, I want to turn it to local government, because I have so admired, and this is going to sound a little bit like like I'm sucking up to you, so to speak, but I'm not. I'm giving you an honest take, and I'm going to tell you some conversations I've had with folks recently about some controversies that you've been involved in. I have watched you try to navigate COVID and small business, particularly the restaurant industry. And you've been courageous. You've been courageous. You have not wavered. You have stuck to the idea that science will drive what you do in Anne Arundel County. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because here's my take on that. I say, and I have a lot, like I'm sure you do, I have a fair, Nestor has a lot. We have a lot of friends that are small restaurateurs.
When you shut down places in Anne Arundel County, it does cost me money.
Yeah, it costs Nestor money because they're some of his clients as well. We reckon these are our friends. They're hanging by a thread. But what I try to say to people, and again, I go back to my executive days, on what day of the week would I go to bed at night and say, you know, I got a good idea. You know what I'm looking forward to tomorrow? I'm going to shut down restaurants, because I think that will really be good for the county and good for, I can't wait until we shut down restaurants. I said, do you think any executive would make that kind of difficult decision without tremendous, tremendous introspection? So first of all, congratulations for the courage, and walk us through what it's felt like and your decision-making process.
Well, I think it was the only decision that I've made where I really wasn't sure I was doing the right thing, because there wasn't a good option. There was not a good option there. And I went back and forth and back and forth. We finally made the decision. December 10th was when I signed that executive order to go from 25% capacity to takeout only. based primarily on the projections of what the hospital surge was going to look like. You know, it was, do you hurt these people who I ran for this office to help, especially the low wage workers, you know, the people who work in those restaurants. And the, you know, a lot of the restaurant owners are also not high rollers. So do you, knowing you're going to hurt them, do you take that action or do you look over here and you see Johns Hopkins telling you that by early February at the height of the surge, that we are likely to have 12,000 COVID patients needing hospital beds in an 8,000 bed system statewide. So that means taking everybody out of the hospital and still not having enough space for the COVID patients. So that's
not to mention if you cut your hand in the kitchen and you have to go to the emergency room.
Right.
Or that's right. The day you have the heart attack or the stroke or need the bypass or go on and on and on.
You need to have a baby. I mean, when we talk 8,000 beds, we're talking about every bed in the hospital, the mental health ward, the maternity ward, everywhere. So,
Stuart, every time my wife relapsed with leukemia and it happened 20 times, the biggest question of the day was, do they have a bed for her?
Right, right.
Yeah. She had cancer. She was dying. She weighed 90 pounds. Do we have a bed for her today?
Yeah. And that's under normal times of bed capacity in a hospital. So you add the COVID patients and we read about it in LA. We read about it in New York. We read about it in Italy. It's not where we want to be. So I was told that one of the only tools that we had was the one place where you can legally go indoors in public and take off your mask, which is a restaurant. And that if we did that, that might have a 20% impact on our COVID numbers. That's a lot of folks. So we did it. Then what happened was, okay, so the judge gave them a temporary restraining order and said, no, I can't do that until he has a hearing to decide whether or not I was being arbitrary and capricious. That was a big surprise. The other three counties where the restaurants, you know, filed these cases, the judges wouldn't take them, or they had immediate hearings and they ruled against them. So he didn't rule against us. He just had a two-week stay on it until we could do a hearing. And then they stayed open. It was going to be a four-week closure because we know the window is closing with this surge spike coming end of January on what we can do, because the impact in the hospitals of what we do now is going to be 4 weeks out. So 2 weeks to get the positive cases, two more weeks before people are in the hospital. So, and here we are coming with the vaccinations and things are going to start to get better. So we were just trying to save some lives before the end of this thing. So 2 weeks in, we have our hearing, and it was really interesting the way the hearing went, because of course the lawyer of the plaintiff is coming in guns blazing and accusing everybody of everything. That's what aggressive lawyers do. The guy that brought the case was a guy named James King, Titan Hospitality. He managed about four or five restaurants, and I hadn't really interacted with him much. He was business partners with the former county executive, Steve Hsu. There was sort of an assumption that, okay, this guy's political on one side, I'm political on the other side, this is going to be ugly. So we hadn't really talked. I did text him during the hearing and said, as soon as the judge rules, can you take my call? Let's talk about, you know, how to rebuild this industry as we move forward. But I'll tell you one thing. I had gone into that hearing.
By the way, not every county executive does that. I just want to throw that out.
Well, and I'll tell you some nice things about the guy, because he was trying to reach me at the same time with the same idea, right? Okay, we did not want to be, you know, turning a crisis in restaurants into a political issue. He didn't want that. I didn't want that. And you know, we've talked since, and we're going to work together. But here was the strange thing, is that we went in and, of course, we made our case for why we made our decisions the way we did. And it's somewhat complicated because they were based on projections. They weren't based on what was going on today in the hospitals. They're based on the projections and trying to prevent the worst case scenario from happening. In the meantime, the projections changed. So Hopkins follows the numbers, and the projections were based on if nobody does anything to push the numbers down. Well, then things got done to push the numbers down, and the projections started to drop into a range that was going to be bad on hospitals, but probably manageable for a short period of time. So I was looking at all of this thinking, you know what, let's not shut them down after 2 weeks of not being able to, then reopen them 2 weeks later and play this yo-yo game. Let's just hold tight where we are and see if we can survive this thing at the 25% capacity. So the judge asked me, we had to make a case for why we did what we did 2 weeks earlier. The judge asked me if we were thinking about keeping them open. And I said, yeah, I am thinking about it. And then there was this question. It's like, if I tell him that we're going to do that and he drops the whole case, then we won't have won the case. We needed to keep our authority to protect public health. We didn't know if this judge was going to say we don't have that authority. That would have been a disaster to be able to take that power away. Anyway, we decided to be honest about it. They dropped the case. We kept the restaurants open. I've been talking to James King. In fact, he came on as a guest with Senator Van Hollen Tuesday night talking about federal funding and assistance to businesses. And it's fine. But this pandemic, things are changing all the time. And all you can do is to listen to all of the information, take the best modeling that exists in the state of Maryland about the projections, and try to keep bad things from happening. So everybody's got their own take on what went down, who won, who didn't win. We retained our authority to, since the case was dropped, our authority to be able to do these public health measures. But damn, we don't want to do them. That's for sure.
Ken, exactly. Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, I'm a worldly guy. I follow people all over the world. They all quote Johns Hopkins everywhere, you know, and they're right down the street. I mean, you have access to the best information in the world right here. And I really believed a year ago that behind the scenes, when this thing got out of hand in New York first and Seattle, that protecting Baltimore and Washington for obvious reasons was really, really a national issue because of the cluster of hospitals we have here and the technology and NSA and all of the things that make government operate, that it's even more important that Anne Arundel County, Howard County, these places aren't dirty, aren't the dirtiest counties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, just Hopkins being there, when you're getting information from Hopkins, to me, that seems very easy to trust, right? That makes it easier for you to sleep at night when you make a tough decision.
What was really confusing, even to the judge, was he kept saying, well, those projections were wrong. Well, first of all, no, those projections were based on nothing changing, and we wanted them to be wrong, you know? So he adjusted the projections just like a weather forecast or a hurricane coming in it, you know, you change based on what happens. And so that's a good thing. It doesn't mean that I shouldn't have listened to them and therefore I did the wrong thing necessarily. So now we're down at, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 in an 8,000 COVID patients in an 8,000 system bed. So there's going to be pressure. I mean, we hear from our police, from our fire department about our ambulances going to the emergency room right now and not being able to get in. I mean, BWMC has Baltimore Washington Medical Center has already, doubled the size of their ICU by adding beds in different places in the hospital, including a dozen that they took out of the ER. So the ER's got 12 fewer beds. You know, when the COVID patients are in there, it's stressful even now in the hospital. So, and we're still under 2,000. So we're going to get, you know, at least another 1,000, maybe 2,000 more in the state COVID patients. We're heading for a difficult time still. But the question is, can we keep our businesses operating? Can we keep, I think we can keep our restaurants at least at 25%. And I'd like to get them back to 50%. I know they do everything in their power to keep from spreading the virus, but the problem is people got to take off their masks to eat the damn food, drink, you know.
It's really a challenge. And tied to that challenge, I think, county executive, is, and again, I always caution folks, so you understand that the county executives aren't the school superintendents. They're not the school board. So the example I used it with county executive boss, said, we're the banks. You know, we write them a check, my friend Kevin Kamenich used to say, and then they go spend the money. But having said that, probably other than restaurants, the most visible thing that that you're involved in, and I'm sure you hear all the time, moms and dads are cooked, man. They've tried, they've had it. Teachers have knocked themselves out. Update us as to where Anne Arundel County is in terms of getting kids back to school and how you think this might play out.
Well, that's another thing that, you know, this things change as we move through this pandemic. So our health officer and our superintendent and our school board set a metric that said, we're going to open starting with elementary as long as we're not above 10 cases per 100,000 people, right? Well, they were, you know, we were down at 5 cases during the summer and we were starting to creep up. And by the time the date came to do it, we were well over 10 and they decided to hold off. Okay, so now we're at 50 cases per 100,000. And the plan was we were going to open our schools starting February 1st. So the school board met just Wednesday night and with the health officer and had a conversation about, okay, what does all this mean? Are we still going with our 10% metric? It doesn't look like we're going to be there for a long time. And then he was saying, well, you know, there's new information, just like with Hopkins. There are studies that are showing that at least when you're in the 20 to 30 range of cases per 100,000, you don't have a higher spread. You don't have a higher rate in the school than you do outside. So the school's not really, it's just, you know, you can operate. You can operate at that level. Whether you can operate at 50 cases per 100,000 without creating a big problem is another story.
Well, 50 becomes 100, right? Like literally?
Right.
Became 10, 10 became 50.
Yeah. Yeah. So they decided they're not going to move. They're not going to pull the trigger for February 1st or 2nd. But I think there's a pretty decent chance they can pull it off by the beginning of March. I mean, the school system needs time to make the transition, but by then the teachers will be vaccinated. If we prioritize teachers in phase 1B, we'll get them vaccinated. So we could have our teachers, you know, all the ones who are willing, vaccinated as they go in. That changes the scenario a lot. And these studies that have come out change the scenario somewhat. So we may be opening our schools at 30 or 40 cases per 100,000 in March. Hopefully we'll be below that by then. Beginning of March, maybe we'll pull it off even before that. But
Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman is our guest, along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. I am Nestor Aparicio. We're meeting with lots of county executives and leaders. Brandon Scott joining us later on in the month here for Baltimore City, and Johnny O, Calvin Ball, all joining us here at Baltimore Positive, including Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones as well. You can check out all that. Don, I love when our guests actually lead us right into the next thing, because we talked about, you know, the Trump thing, the businesses, the restaurants, you know, then he leads us right into vaccines, which is, that's the thing going over the hill, right? That's the thing we're all trying to, that's the next thing on your plate. And you know, my wife and I sit here and she's more high risk being diabetic and whatnot than I. It's like she'll be in line in front of me, but we're all like looking on that U.S. let's say, oh, I'm 238 millionth or whatever it's going to be. As you understand it, for a regular old citizen in your county, what do you tell them about being in line for your county that would make Anne Arundel County different than Harford County or different than being in Idaho, let's say?
Well, it may be different than Idaho, but it's not different from being in Howard. We're operating, basically there's the CDC categories, and then the state is reflecting most of those, but some variation within that. The vaccinations are really coming from the Fed. So it's pretty predictable that there's some problems right now trying to get this stuff rolled out and rolled out quickly. And just to sort of tell you what it's like on the ground here, trying to do this is, so last week we had 2,500 vaccinations to get out and we were following the guidelines. You know, we've got our hospitals doing their own separate thing. We got Walmart and CVS, whose idea that was, I don't know, to do the nursing homes. And then we've got our health department is doing our other health industry workers and our first responders. So we got that underway. They get an email from the state Saturday morning. Can you take 5,000 vaccinations? If you can get them into people's arms in 2 weeks, we'll give them to you. So, of course, you know, our health officer's calling saying, can we make a plan? Do we have the money to be able to pay the people to do the da-da-da-da-da? And so we say, absolutely. So they make the plan to be able to get, you know, these vaccination centers open and staffing and everything, being told that, you know, that they're going to come on Monday, maybe Tuesday, when then it's Thursday, we haven't gotten them yet. So then those people are sitting around with nothing to do. So what people don't always realize is that there's a lot of staffing, a lot of logistics.
Well, back up.
And when you have like 0 days to plan, it's difficult, and that'll get better, I think.
I hate to interrupt, but I want to back up to that point, because I think this is what interests people. You were supposed to get the 5,000 on Monday. It's Thursday, and you haven't gotten them. Now, were they to come to you via?
I could be wrong. They may have come this morning. They haven't come this morning.
Well, a day or two. Were they to you from the state?
Well, not really. The state tells who, wherever they're coming from. I guess it's
state's a middle person, right?
They don't actually go to a state facility and then us. They get shipped directly, but the state is handling logistics of where they get shipped to. Yeah.
Okay. So somewhere there's, it really is a supply chain issue, at some point.
But everything in America is a local issue, right? I mean, that really is what it comes down to. Is this? I'm hearing like, I mean, are you going to clear, you know, the stadium in Annapolis? Those are the kinds of places we're going to need to do this, from my understanding. Big, open spaces and lots and lots of people and ingress and egress. That's not a cluster, literally, right?
Right. And it's a logistics thing. And that's how we've done the testing, and that's how we'll do the vaccinations. And you actually pegged it already. The Navy Stadium parking lot is one site, and then another one out by the Anne Arundel Medical Center.
Don thinks I'm not qualified to run for governor. you're making my own point. My wife thinks I'm running 4 years from now. So I'm just telling you.
Well, Mr. Speaking of running, you are not a career elected official, and you now have been in this job a little over 2 years. A question to you is, you had some thoughts as to why you wanted to do this crazy thing. You threw your hat in the arena. You win. Not many people thought you were going to win. You probably thought you were going to win. But now you've had that big chair for 2 years. What have you found unexpected about the job? In other words, what surprised you the most, and what do you feel the best about? The second part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually gained trust in local government in some ways, in the people. I've been really surprised by the quality of the people who work in Anne Arundel County government, especially, you know, the department heads that I deal with, and the quality and the hard work, you know, the 24/7, you know, the people are on the phone all weekend, you know, dealing with whatever it is.
How many people work in Anne Arundel County government? Just what's the big number?
About 5,000.
5,000. Okay. That's a big number.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the part that I knew would be difficult is government red tape, government, you know, there's stupid stuff, there's waste there, and it's really hard to get rid of it. It's really hard to fix. And everybody always says they're going to cut the red tape and they're going to cut the fat out of the budget, and it's there. And it's a constant struggle trying to make it more efficient. I thought I would like it, but I really kind of love it, you know, because every single day we do something that helps people, make something work better. You know, we're always making progress, and that's because we have all these great people who are constantly working, you know, to make that happen. And I get to be at the center of it all and having people report to me about the stuff they're doing, or we come up with an idea and then somebody runs off and implements it. And I get to be Mr. Idea, Mr. Part of the conversation and the decision. So it's really lively. There's a lot of creativity. There's a lot of opportunity there's a lot of salesmanship in it too, though, you know, as the politician, as the person who, you know, it's not just about running for office. You got to convince people that, that they should support whatever it is that you're trying to do so that it actually happens, because I don't have the power to make stuff happen. I gotta mobilize people, just like when I was a community organizer to pass the forest conservation bill or whatever it is that we need. It's fun to be in the position that I'm in, but at the same time, getting to be engaged in organizing and marketing and selling ideas to people, which to me is fascinating. So, I like the job. I feel like we're doing some great work, and, I get my butt kicked a lot, especially on social media. There's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of, you know, the Trump era really kind of, it's a difficult time to govern because there's some question about whether truth has value. And if you read the comments on social media, you pretty much can lose faith quickly. But most people believe in facts, and I think we're okay so far.
What are you hopeful about on that note? Because, like, it sounds to me like you could lose faith, but guys like you don't lose faith, you know? Guys, it's like the three of us don't lose faith. So, you know, I don't know what – and some days I can't even articulate what keeps me going other than it keeps me going. But Wednesday was tough, you know? COVID's tough. The budget's tough. I mean, everything's tough, right? But what keeps you hopeful?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's having the long view. And I mean, I'm not a super old. I'm going to be 60 next year, so I'm pretty old.
That used to sound old to me.
And my dad was really old. My dad would be 100 and whatever. He was 93 when he died. And he would talk a lot. I had a lot of respect for him. He did work in government. He was Assistant Secretary of Defense under Kennedy and, you know, fought in World War II. And so saw a lot of history, Cold War. And he would always say that.
I love how you just brush by that. The next time we get together, I'm going to ask a lot about that. You can't just drop that on me like that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was the bomb shelter guy building bomb shelters for the Cold War.
I knew it would get more interesting. See that?
Yeah. 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 But, you know, he always said that humanity, he would talk about humanity as a thing, is kind of like the Martin Luther King about the arc of justice, but bending towards justice. But that, you know, we're making progress. We are, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs. But if you look back through history, we've gotten through a lot and we're evolving towards being more connected and more peaceful.
Well, you know, we haven't even, and I know we want to be respectful of your time, we have not even gotten into budget and General Assembly, so hopefully we can have you back somewhere in the middle of the Assembly just to talk about what's going on down there. But before we do, I want to play armchair psychologist here for a minute and let you go, and I want you to feel free to say, no, Don, you're totally wrong. And it goes
back.
Which
I've done many times, by the way.
Many times. I had more than a couple folks call me when you got into this latest dust up over the restaurants, and the conversation typically went like this. They said, Don, what do you think the county executive's up to? What? I mean, this doesn't seem, it seems politically risky. And why would he? And my comment to them was, and I want you to react to this. And again, if I'm all wet, tell me I'm all wet. I said, you know, I've talked to the county executive a few times, really have gotten to know him and like him. And I said, let me tell you, I haven't broached it to him like this. Let me tell you what my sense is. He's a guy that had a pretty good life before he was county executive. And I think he's a guy who decided that if he was going to do the job, he was going to do it based on one simple premise, that he was literally going to try to do what he thought was the right thing every day. And then at the end of 4 years, the people of Anne Arundel County would appreciate that and reward him with a second term, or they wouldn't, and he would be okay with that because he would have done it. Is that am I accurate?
Yeah, no, I absolutely am. I don't need this job. I mean, I there's a lot of things I'd like to do and could do and would do if I didn't have this job. And I will run for a second term. And it's just as much because the people around me want to continue the work that we're doing. We believe in it. And it's a place I think I can be most useful right now. But if I would much rather feel like I had done the right thing and lose the job than get reelected feeling like I like a bunch of people died because of some decision that I made. Yeah, it was really interesting right before that, and I know we're running out of time, but all the Central Maryland County executives, we had conversations about this. We brought in these Hopkins people to brief us all together, and we were sort of, you know, we didn't all do the same thing, but we all understood why everybody was doing what they were doing. We all respect each other, and this includes Barry Glassman in Harford County, who's a Republican. The rest of us are Democrats, you know,
Oh, wait, so, we were with him the morning the COVID broke out, literally.
The very morning.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love the guy. He's a sheep farmer, you know, what you know. Anyway, so, but Montgomery, Prince George's, Anne Arundel, and Baltimore City all chose as part of what they did to go back to takeout. The other, I guess, four of the big eight didn't. And I got to tell you that, well, I think our numbers would have been pushed down further had we done it when we were allowed to do it. I'm not sure it would have made a huge difference in the long run. I mean, Baltimore County didn't do it, and their numbers have come down well. Baltimore City did it. Their numbers have come down well. There's no question that restaurants, people dining in, does spread the virus. And I think we struggled with that all summer as Annapolis was drawing people into bars and restaurants, you know, and it, But I don't criticize anybody for not doing what we did. I don't think I'm better because I did what we did, because this damn virus just keeps making liars out of us. You know, I used to train horses for a living. And we'd always say that, you know, a horse will make a liar out of you every time.
Ross Petticoat told me that a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, same with this virus. I mean, there's certain things we just don't, they're bigger than us.
Well, good luck with it. Again, thanks. One of Nestor's favorite phrases is thanks for being on the wall. And those of you who are running local government during this have truly been on the wall. I do hope we can come back to you in the middle of the session, talk budget, talk General Assembly. But thanks for showing the courage and thanks for joining us again on Baltimore Positive.
And you'll find me and my wife finding open spaces as spring springs down in Anne Arundel County. You're going to have to give me a couple places where you have to go for a walk. I think we're going to do the BWI airport, that little route around the backside there, watch the planes land. We've always talked about doing that.
We're going to do that.
Yeah.
There's
a snowball stand right around the corner there, too, over in Ferndale. So we got it all going on. I'll be in Anne Arundel County and see you soon. Thanks for coming
on. Give me a call.
We appreciate you. There he goes, County Executive Stuart Pittman. I'm also going to borrow his line about being in the place he's most useful. We're trying to be useful here. Former Baltimore County Executive Don Mueller somehow thought I'd be useful. I somehow thought talking to politicians and leaders and educators would be useful, and I didn't even know we were going to have a plague. So we've moved everything from WNST.net over to Baltimore Positive. We're having incredible conversations. And we're ready for the Ravens to go win a Super Bowl as well. Tons of stuff from the Tennessee Titans side as well as the Ravens side. We chatted with old alums this week. Matt Stover is at Baltimore Positive this week. Jared Johnson, Double J's there. Blaine Bishop from the other side and the Titans. So all of that, sports, news, politics, post-congressional issues off of Wednesday, all up at BaltimorePositive.com.